Voices of Hope is a podcast of New Hope Presbyterian Church in Castle Rock, Colorado. You can listen to our sermons, interviews, and Pastor Pod on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and any popular podcast platforms. Welcome to A Bigger Table. This series is going to focus on groups of people whom the church tends to marginalize and put on the fringes, rather than fully including and accepting them into the body of Christ. Churches often say we are welcome to all, but if you're an outsider, or you don't understand the undertones of Christian subculture, then you really are not welcomed in reality. These series of interviews are meant to shed light on those that the American church has hurt, in an effort to reconcile and make the Lord's table even bigger. At New Hope, we practice an open table, that no matter where you are, or where you're from, or what you believe, you are invited to participate. So let's take that practice into the world. Let's include those who the church has shamed and guilted for far too long. I hope you'll take this journey with me as we discover the stories of those who are our friends and family. This is A Bigger Table. In these next two podcasts, we're going to talk about mental health and the church. This is a topic that the church has strayed away from because most of us don't really know how to handle mental illness or people who live with certain mental health issues. And so most of the time when we don't know what to do about something or we don't know enough about it, we decide to do nothing. We're going to hear from Dan this week, and he's going to talk about his whole experience with his living with mental health. Dan is a peer of mine from seminary. He was a pastor, associate pastor at a church in Michigan for a while, and now currently works as a social worker. I think all of us have our blind spots when it comes to mental health. And I think sometimes we treat it as a spiritual thing that, well, you just need to pray more, or you need to read the Bible, or you're not really listening to God. You're letting the world and evil enter your life, and that's why you have this mental health issue. I want to break those stereotypical ideas about mental health, especially in the church. You're going to hear from Dan, and he's going to talk about his experience, and he's going to talk about his experience as a pastor and as a social worker and what that's like to be within the Christian community and live with a mental health issue and how that affects him and how people see him. So please enjoy our conversation. All right, Dan, thanks for joining us on the podcast today. We're talking about mental health and maybe the ways that the church has kind of pushed people with mental health aside or hasn't taken mental health seriously. Examples such as maybe you need to pray more, read your Bible more, it's just in your head. And so the first question I want to ask you, what is your current role and what is your experience with mental health?
Right. So as far as my current role, I'm currently serving as a social worker for a social services organization in West Michigan. And I focus on food security for people who are, for one reason or another, usually employed or on a fixed income and don't have enough money to get food. And the other half of my job is focused on people who are currently living on the streets experiencing homelessness. So I'm not currently working in a church setting, but I have in the past, and my mental health played a fairly crucial role in my experience of working in the church.
If you're willing to talk about it, do you have a diagnosis? And what was that like to put a name to something that you had been feeling or experiencing?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I'm going to give you a bit of history. The first time that I would say I had a mental health episode was when I was a college student. And at the time, I didn't have a vocabulary for mental health. Now, this is interesting because I grew up in a household where severe mental health diagnoses were prevalent, but I didn't know about them, and it wasn't talked about either in my family or in my community. So When I first started to experience pretty severe flare-ups in my symptoms of mental health, I didn't know what to call it, so I just called it depression. I assumed if I'm not happy or things are not going well, that must mean I'm depressed. And in what I can only imagine was an attempt to support people struggling with mental health for the first time, our campus health department basically just took me at my word, didn't do any real sort of digging or attempt to diagnose anything further, and prescribed me antidepressants, which at the time I thought was fantastic because I thought it would fix me. And I lived with that self-label that, you know, I said came from a professional, because in my mind, if a doctor didn't challenge it or tell me I was wrong, it was true. So I told people that I had, you know, clinical depression for a number of years. And it wasn't until I finished seminary that I realized that, in fact, I was not experiencing depression. It was anxiety. I was having acute anxiety attacks. And looking back at this point in my journey, back to that, it's fascinating that I was able to mix those up, because now they seem very different, that I have had bouts of both of them, that being both depression and anxiety. But for many years, I took antidepressants, and it either somehow treated or was effectively a placebo for the anxiety that very rarely flared up. Now, in the most recent, what I guess would call again a mental health episode that I had, which was about 5 years ago, I did check myself into a hospital, a mental health hospital, to have a chance to have a conversation with some professionals about what I was experiencing. And that's when I first learned that anxiety was a more appropriate diagnosis, that there was depression there, but it was interacting with me in a different way than I thought, and was able to get medicated for both of those. Now, since then, I, through working with a therapist and a psychiatrist, was diagnosed with bipolar 3, which apparently some mental health professionals do not consider to be a an appropriate diagnosis. There's bipolar 1 and bipolar 2. Whether or not a bipolar 3 exists, from what I understand, from what my doctor told me and brief Google searches, there's debate as to whether or not such a thing exists, but it's sort of bipolar 1 is quite severe. 2, they consider to be hypomania rather than full-blown mania, which is one of the characteristics of bipolar disorder. And in bipolar 3, it's often marked by depression without the stages of mania, but depression that responds to a different class of drug. So rather than the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors or other common classes of antidepressants, my depression responds to a mood stabilizer, which is usually used to treat bipolar or other mood disorders rather than depression. So for a long answer to a short question, yes, I have a diagnosis. Getting the accurate one, getting the accurate medication was a journey. And yes, it scares me. Yes, it was hard. It was more difficult than helpful. And I have been fairly private and shy about sharing that diagnosis with even family and friends, because I'm so scared of what they will think of me when they hear the words bipolar.
So in some ways, I mean, did it give any relief at all, like to actually put a name to it, or did it just make it feel more scary?
That's a good question. I think the way I experienced it was that I was so desperate for relief from my symptoms, which were just constant anxiety and a depressive state in which I could not function on a daily basis. I could not eat. I could not do much of anything getting out of bed. I was so desperate for relief from that, that the name that they gave it mattered so little to me. What mattered was finding something to deal with it. And while I was doing cognitive behavioral therapy, I was working with a therapist formally and a friend therapist on the side, it was the mood stabilizer that eventually pulled me out of a months long spell of depression and anxiety that really made it difficult to exist on a day-to-day basis, hold down a job, interact with friends and family. So what they called it was not as important to me at the time as finding, in this case, the medicine that was able to help restore me to who I once was. Looking back, though, it is very important. The naming of it is, I think it's scary for me. Naming depression and anxiety were both common enough and familiar enough after college, after seminary, in the larger cultural movements that we're, you know, a part of right now on social media to accept people who have, you know, mental illness or struggle with mental health. Those felt somehow safer or something that I was less scared of. But to hear bipolar in the months and years since that diagnosis has been a challenge. And in fact, I often don't mention that I have it. I'll tell people openly that I struggle with depression or anxiety, but again, very rarely will I use the word bipolar.
So then how does your mental health speak into your faith, or, you know, vice versa? How does your faith speak into your mental health? Have you done a lot of thinking on that kind of relationship and dynamic?
Yeah, good question. So I grew up in a very, what I would call a fundamentalist, traditionalist sort of Christian subculture in the Midwest. And I had a very transactional understanding of faith and of God. And when God was happy, God bestowed gifts. When God was upset, God either caused or allowed bad things to happen. Bad things are a result of sin. So I assumed when I was in college, I remember still going out to to Pizza Hut, Orange City's fine dining, and sitting down with a classmate of mine and telling him, I think I'm depressed and I don't know what I've done wrong. I mean, I do. I know what my sins are, but it also doesn't seem, and I couldn't say it didn't seem fair, because I knew fair was me burning in hell. I had learned that fair was not the standard I wanted to ask God to follow. Mm-hmm. But it didn't seem right that I would somehow be damned to this, what seemed like would be eternal suffering of depression at the time, when overall I was a pretty good person. And as soon as I started to form those sentences or complaints, I realized, dear God, I clearly am suffering for my sin, because I'm clearly not that good of a person. I do these bad things, or don't do these good things. I've strayed from Scripture. I'm not in prayer and in Scripture and in church, and I am in sexual sin, and therefore this is God's judgment upon me. So that was the beginning of my journey of understanding mental health through the lens of faith. Now, since then, I would like to think that it's, since then, I would like to think that it's matured somewhat, and my understanding of God certainly has changed. You know, I now take a fairly biological or physiological approach to what causes mental illness. And I think that anything that strays from the perfection of God's intention and God's intended order pains God. That being said, I don't often consider there to be a terribly strong spiritual element to my mental health. And I think that says more about my own faith journey and less about a theology that I've developed intentionally. But as I have sort of drifted away from the church and away from a more active, ongoing relationship with God in the sense that I knew it when I was a young person or a high school or a college student, I have spent less time and energy thinking about how that intersects with other areas of my life.
given that kind of one of your first interactions with mental health and talking to somebody about it and kind of thinking that it's your own sin that's causing it, what would you want the church to know about mental health?
So I think the church, like the culture at large, maybe it lags a little behind that, needs to understand that mental health, like any other kind of health, is almost never is it true that a person can control their mental health. Sure, there are habits that we can have to, you know, do our best to set ourselves up for success, but there are certain things we can't control. I mean, just the same as there are in our physical health. Someone may get cancer from smoking, but certainly an appropriate response would not be to shame them or ostracize them for that. And also, mental health is a newer field that we're still learning so much about that we don't always know what we can do to you know, set ourselves up for success well. So certainly I would want the church to be a place of empathy, of safety, a place where more so than anywhere else in our culture at large, people feel safe to talk about what they're struggling with because they know it won't be met with judgment. They know it won't be met with people trying to force them away, to ostracize them, to call them the other. I guess on the flip side of that, it would also be that the church not respond with trying to cast the demons out of the head of people with schizophrenia. I have a family member in my immediate family who has paranoid schizophrenia, and the amount of times people have tried to pray it out of him has left me just incredibly jaded with that response from the church. A more robust understanding of mental illness and how it affects people and how the church can both contribute towards people's mental health and support people who are dealing with mental illness is probably the crux of anything I'd like to see happening.
Yeah, because I think, like you said, it is kind of a newer field. Like, we're discovering more about the brain every day. And things that maybe in the past we thought, well, they're either just lazy or even further back, demons in them.
Yes.
We're finding out it's more and more there's these connections in our brains that some of us are not making those pathways like other people are. And so that, I think, I don't want to go off on a tangent, but I think that also really redefines what is normal, you know, because people in church, whether we like it or not, or think we do, we all have an image in our head of what it means to be a normal functioning person in society. And we're finding out more and more that, every brain has different connections and not connections that I don't think that's even possible or plausible anymore to say there is a normal to work against, I guess. I mean, would you agree with that?
Yeah, and absolutely, yeah. And I, like I said, you know, as I've gotten older, I've seen, I've learned about the mental illnesses that were always a part of my family and seen some crop up that either may have been there all along but were never named or are new. And my family, if you looked at each individual member of my family, very few of them function in a way that society deems as appropriate. And I think there's this myth in our society that we're all always progressing, we're all always getting better, and whether or not those two should even be considered the same thing is a whole nother podcast you could have. But the idea that that should be intrinsically true of someone on someone's journey of mental health, while it may be desirable, may not be realistic. So the family member I mentioned who has paranoid schizophrenia may well likely live the rest of their life sometimes having good days and often having bad days. You know, there's very little indication that they will slowly get better with hard work, or that if they just stick with the regimen of medicine and therapy, it will all be okay, or at least they'll have a better life. That idea is so ingrained in us, in our society. It's sort of what feeds the narrative of pulling yourself up by your bootstraps, is we all could work hard enough to do better. And I think that is just absolutely detrimental to people struggling with mental health issues or mental illness, is you can't apply that to them. And probably you shouldn't be applying it to most people, but certainly not in those cases, because this is not something under their control. That's the entire issue. Now, like I've said before, you know, you may have someone listening who says, well, if you're depressed and you do things that make you sad, that's bad for you. Okay. Yes, there may be cases in which one could, you know, I don't want to take away the capacity for us to contribute towards our health, even on a stage of mental illness, but to understand that mental health is so much more nuanced than that, and that we need to challenge that narrative, that assumption on its face anytime we see it creeping up in our understandings of mental health.
Yeah, and I think it's important also to know and point out to people that I think this is fairly new understanding of language we use when we talk about mental health. Some people will say, well, they are depressed, or I'm a depressive, or something like that, instead of saying I live with depression, because that's not going to be a thing that defines you as a person. And the biggest thing I see with anybody struggling with mental health is that other people tend to label them as, well, they have a mental illness. But that's not entirely who you are, even if you're living with a mental illness.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I mean, you've probably heard me tripping over myself, even just in this recording, trying to, you know, is it better to say struggle with mental health or mental illness? I don't always know.
Right.
But I do know that what you're saying is completely true. We use things to identify people because they're different than us. So we say the handicapped person rather than the person with a handicap or a disability. We say, you know, the homeless person rather than the person experiencing homelessness. We want to use word, and you could say it's semantics and it's just the fastest, easiest way to say it. But the problem with that is you are assigning something intrinsic to that person that is not intrinsically true about them. So like you said, it's not a depressed person. It's a person struggling with depression, and that hopefully is temporary and doesn't last forever. But don't reduce their identity to what they're struggling with at that time.
What has been the greatest blessing of this journey through mental health for you, Dan?
I did not expect you to ask something like that.
Yeah, like, because a lot of times from this one and the other podcast we did for a bigger table is atheists, and then we did LGBTQ. And so I want people to be able to reframe and think about their journey and their story a little bit differently, maybe in a redemptive way, that what has been the thing that has come out of this that you have either grown or understood better through this process that you wouldn't know before.
So I'm going to both answer that and turn it on its head a little bit. My answer would be that at the time that all of this, that this journey sort of exploded and forced itself upon me in a really difficult way, where I mentioned for months I was struggling with daily functioning, I had just started a full-time employment with a church of all places. And it was, in general, one of the most difficult, unforgiving, horrible places I could have imagined happen. There was just a radical misunderstanding of what it all meant and what I was and wasn't able to do as a result of it. And very few people wanted to talk to me about that. Now, that doesn't sound like the start of an answer of what was a blessing. But what I will say is, through the either incredibly misguided or intentionally mean-spirited efforts of one of the church staff, I was asked to go on stage the day after I was discharged from the mental health hospital and let the entire congregation know that I had been in there under the premise of not wanting people to worry. And I was very uncomfortable with that, but I was new and I didn't really feel like I had a choice. So I did. I was very brief. And after that, there were two people who thanked me and told me about family members or children of theirs who they feared were struggling with mental health, and they did not know there was anyone else in that community who did. So I guess my answer is that is what was meaningful to me is though it wasn't how I would have liked to have it happen, it did allow me to sort of shine a light in the darkness in a church that did not understand or know how to deal with or have anyone in any capacity of leadership who was talking about these things. And it allowed me to become that person. On the flip side, I would like to say, if there are listeners who aren't ready for a redemptive answer, who are still like with David in the few Psalms where he doesn't turn things around into a positive outcome, I would say for the most part, it sucked and it hasn't gotten better. And I haven't really grown closer to God because of it. I just try to function day to day, and 99.9% of the time with the right combination of meds, it's been working really well. But when the symptoms flare up, I hate life and I despair and I do not feel closer to God because of that. And that's just an unfortunate reality that I feel like it's maybe important to name even as you're looking for, you know, a silver lining as well.
Yeah, and that's important. I think that goes along with what you were saying earlier too, of it's learning how to live with it rather than maybe you won't get better. But you may learn how to cope easier, how to get the right meds, but it's not like it's going away necessarily.
And I'll say very briefly that that was one of the most important parts of my journey of mental health is when my therapist finally convinced me to stop waiting for it to go away. Stop putting every ounce of energy you have into wishing it were not this way. And instead learn that it will be a passenger on this journey with you that will sometimes be present, sometimes be absent, sometimes be visible, sometimes be invisible. But that analogy, and it's been made in other movies and I'm sure books as well, that there is a dark passenger that comes with us in life. And mine has the name of bipolar. Mine has the name of anxiety. And it has other names too. But that is a part of who I am. And I cannot separate myself from that. It's fundamentally a part of who I am in a way that I expect I'll be dealing with it long term. But learning the mechanisms to cope with and the tools and the people in life who will support me in the midst of that, that has been where redemption has occurred. In learning how to take that journey in a more life-giving or meaningful way.
Well, Dan, thanks for your vulnerability on this. Thank you for your honesty and talking about your own journey, and wish you well as you continue to live with bipolar 3, right? Is that what it's officially called? Well, yeah, you said it was complicated. Some more research,
but as far as I understand, that's what my diagnosis said. And last time I left the psychiatrist, I noticed it said in remission behind it. So I whatever that means.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us and talking. And hopefully somebody is going to find some hope and redemption in this interview with you.
Very good. Thanks for having me.
I hope Dan has given you some broader perspective on mental health and who are the people that live with it. It may be people that you don't suspect. And so as you go out this week, as you interact with people, remember to always have compassion. If you enjoyed this podcast, please rate and review us, share us with your friends, and we will see you next time.